Hi, I'm Juan Pablo Montoya, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hameen, my co-host. This is podcast number 915, December 6th. 2021, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say red skies at night, red mist and eyes, Massey tell no lies. Back to Mr. Rogers, the Pravda of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Mr. E says Le Professeur is the greatest. LCH says Max is an effing crazy man. Max says F1 is all about penalties. Massey turns down offer from Let's Make a Deal. Just a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab, you know, you want to. And just another reminder, if you want to receive updates to our podcast, as well as occasional promotions and giveaways that are only announced via our email updates, just go to the front page, upper right-hand corner, throw in your email address, and you get the good stuff with a little cherry on top. Nas, I have to welcome you to the studio. How are you?
Mr. Rogers, the whole last week, I was super happy, smiling as I was working, looking forward to this fantastic Grand Prix coming to the end of the season and after the race and during the race. I was dazed and confused as to what the hell is going on, who is leading, who is in charge. People are crashing into each other. Everybody keeps going. I mean, this was like the, I remember many years ago, I went to a figure eight racing in Watsonville, California, not far from where you are. That had so much fun as the race in Saudi Arabia. And you know, both places are famous for dirt, or sand, I should say, because the figure eight racing was on dirt. But, I mean, unbelievable. You know, as Mr. Taylor would say, I've seen fire, I've seen rain, but I've never seen rolling thunder like this. I mean, but, you know, it had to happen. I mean, everybody knew the closer we get to the finale, the closer LCH gets to his lead, which is now equal, we're going to have, lack of a better word, throat slitting. What was your take on the race?
I still am trying to figure out my take on this race. I mean, every day I check the internet to see what else is going on, what else has been handed out. Like yesterday I checked, extra penalty for Max. Because we'll see what happens is Massey gets a bucket. And it's got a lot of penalties in it. He's got to get rid of them all. That's the rules in FIA. So yesterday, he looked in the bucket. There was another penalty down there that he didn't use. So another extra 10-second penalty, which absolutely means nothing. But it just sounded so good to give Max more penalties because Max wants penalties, apparently. And we are in a merry penalty go-round. And it's laughs every day, and I'm telling you, I have never seen anything like this in my life. Now, Christian Horner, he was talking about the deal. And, you know, I like Let's Make a Deal. It's a great show, but he didn't expect it to be right there on the second red flag. And speaking after the race, Christian Horner said he had never encountered such an example of the FIA race director effectively offering teams deals over where they would or wouldn't start. Christian Horner says, I've not come across this previously. Obviously, we voiced our own agreement. I'm sure Mercedes voiced their disagreement. It was just quite frustrating. I agreed in the end to start Ocon first, with Hamilton second and Verstappen third. Let's make a deal. I mean, the cards were going, the dice were bouncing off the wall. Oh my God. I mean, this is the most bizarre race. I mean, we thought Spa was bizarre, but there was no racing at Spa. It was just a lot of moisture. But this one, well, this racetrack is great, except that it has no functionality in reality, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, a lot of things you touched there. As far as the rules are concerned, I mean, everybody who has been following racing for a while, they all agree, and I'm in that group, we have too many rules now. That's one problem. And then, you know, once you have rule and you have an independent body of stewards, they have to follow and enforce the rules. But what is happening here, sometimes a penalty is given, sometimes it's not. So nobody knows what the hell is going on. And that is very, very bad for the sport. And then, I am sure Michael Massey is doing the best he can under the circumstances. And of course, he is not the steward. He's the race director. So he's in a Aussie pickle. He's got a tough job to do. But I think, because I had never heard of him till the passing of Charlie Whiting. And I think Charlie Whiting was there for so long, involved in Formula One racing before becoming a steward and race director. He was with Bernie and his Brabham team, and he commanded a lot of respect. People listened to him. I'm not saying Michael Massey is doing a bad job, but his lack of experience and lack of time on the job, I think has not given him the opportunity to blend in with all the fighting factions, you know, and the teams. He's got a tough job, but they really need to do something to get this thing sorted out, because everybody knew this was going to be bad. But Mr. Rogers, you know, I'm hoping that the final race of the season on this coming Sunday will not be the second coming of Adelaide 1994 or third coming of Suzuka. And speaking of Suzuka, when Ayrton Senna crashed into Prost and became world champion, you know, his thing was Prost closed the door and they collided, okay? And a lot of people thought it was deliberate, and Senna said no. But a year later, at the same track, he confessed he did it on purpose because Prost had done the same thing to him the year earlier. And when I watched the race Sunday, and when I heard David Croft shouting, they've collided, I just could not believe that these two guys would, that Lewis would hit Max in the rear, which was last thing you would expect. I mean, you would expect Max running into him to take him out or doing a side job, but not Lewis running into him. And then there was this talk that there was confusion, that Max was told to slow down, but the message has not been relayed to Lewis. So there was a lot of, you know, talk during the telecast. What was going on? And then this morning, as I've been listening in different podcasts and video blogs and all kind of stuff and BBC podcasts, and there was this question mark whether Max did a brake test as Lewis had claimed. And then finally, just about an hour ago, I read that FIA has confirmed that he did a brake, and Max is certainly one of the greatest racing talents we have ever seen. And same can be said, of course, of Lewis. And for this thing to come down like this, it's very, very bad. It's very sad. I'm very disappointed that this wonderful championship is going to end pretty much like this. And I will be equally happy, to be honest with you, whoever wins. A wee bit more for Max only because of the Honda factor. You know, they've come a long way from their McLaren and Nando days, and all the jokes and insults they took, and to topple Lewis Hamilton in a Mercedes would be quite an achievement. But on the other side of the fence, or the garage, winning 8 championships would be an incredible achievement too. So I just hope that we have a clean race. But I don't have a solution to this problem, but I think they should make it very clear, man, that if somebody's trying to pass him, you can't do what you did in Brazil. and you cannot break test somebody. And I'm not saying Lewis is all innocent. That's not the point. But I think this thing is getting out of hand. And sir, you know, you and many other people have already accused Sky Network of British bias towards Lewis Hamilton. And everybody has the right to their opinion. But while I was reading up on this, what happened on Sunday, I came across an article on this website, which I go every day, ItaliaRacing.net, because they do a lot of racing series, which I enjoy reading about. It's in Italian, but thanks to modern technology, click of a button, you can translate the whole thing. And sure, there is a little bit lost in translation, but I will come to that, what this guy wrote, who is a very well-known Italian journalist. It may surprise some people what he's saying about Max. But, you know, the only good thing is that the track is fantastic. Man, I don't know if you watch any of the Formula 2 races there. There are some blind spots on this corner. And, you know, when it was announced, remember when poor Dan Weldon had his fatal accident? And when they announced that they're going to have this race with $1 million purse and 40 cars on a mile and a half track, when they have 33 on Indy 500, 2.5 mile track, I just had an inkling that things may go wrong. I did not think it would go as wrong as they did. It was mentioned about this track that it's the second longest track in Formula One after Spa and the second fastest after Monza. Think about it. Monza is over 150 miles per hour, and so is this track. So what happened there is not a surprise. But what's your take on the track itself, Senor?
I think it was dangerous. It was too fast. Too many blind corners. I mean, the F2 race ended early with a red flag because of those problems. I say we stay away from this track, or we just unleash Max and Lewis and let them do what they want on the track. I think this track is too dangerous. I thought the speed was great, but even watching the Max Verstappen qualifying final lap where he made his mistake, watching the first purple sector, watching the second purple sector, and then for me it was a given. I knew he was going to lose it. He was pushing too hard. This track brings up very, very scary moments for me when people are not sober. And when I say sober, I mean when they're not under the influence of speed racing, because it can be very scary.
Or under the influence of Lewis Hamilton?
Excuse me?
You heard me loud and clear, young man. Well, you know, I was thinking this morning, Mr. Rogers, that it's still not over. Max has equal chance of winning the championship as Lewis. Okay, whoever's ahead is going to win the championship. But what I was thinking was this. I think Max, and more so his papa, Jos, did you see him slamming the desk or table or whatever he was slamming in qualifying?
Of course I did.
Yes. I think they are now realizing why the 2016 world champion quit Formula One only a few days after winning the championship. When you got a guy, you can brake test him, somebody can damage his wing, and he still sets the fastest lap and wins the race, you got something special going on there. Okay? I am just loving the competition. And I think what has happened here is, you know, only last month, LCH was behind by 19 points. And at one time, he was behind by 32 points, which was many, many races ago. So Max was totally in the mood for regime change. And I thought this will happen, because I've been saying for a long time that he has the package to win this race. What happened in Silverstone was very sad. What happened in Baku was very sad for Max. But in Brazil, Mercedes launched their own Operation Barbarossa, and now their Field Marshal Hamilton has marched to 3 successive wins. Siege has been laid on Max's first championship. There is one way out now, and that is to finish ahead of LCH in Yas Marina. But Lucky Strike is continuing to smoke the competition. And season finale on Sunday is now on Electric Avenue. Somebody is going to get zapped. Bzzz. Who it will be, I don't know. But you were right all along, Mr. Rogers. I have to give that to you. You've been saying ever since Max started winning races and increasing his championship that Mercedes is sandbagging. And you know, there is no shortage of sand in Saudi Arabia and Abu Dhabi. So maybe they have a lot of sandbagging still to do, but this is very, very exciting. Your call for Sunday's race? Who's the champion, sir?
Well, it's pretty simple. Look at where Perez is at every race. The only reason why a Red Bull is even competing with Mercedes is because of Max. Without Max, they're not competing for the championship. Without Max, they're not fighting Lewis Hamilton. Without Max, there is no big competition. It's Max that makes this car come alive and pretend to be a contender, when in fact, it's just another one of the guys on the back row. Let's face it, Lewis Hamilton hasn't changed teams. He's still in the best car. He's still in the Mercedes. Let me put it this way. If Bottas is on the front row with his buddy, we know the Mercedes is still the best car in town. I'm telling you, Red Bull is only looking great. And Marco knows that. Horner knows that. Without Max, this Red Bull thing is nothing but number five, number four. They'd be fighting with Leclerc. So, yes, Mercedes is still the best team. Mercedes will win in Abu Dhabi because there'll be a penalty and Max will be given a reprimand for passing too aggressively, trying to make a crappy car look good. Max deserves a trophy for making a pig look like a jaguar.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, everything you have said about Max is 1,000% true and correct. And of course, that will be so nice if he can pull it off and still win the championship. But the same can be said for Lewis Carl Hamilton, because without him, where is Toto? He's not going to be slamming his fist on the desk. He won't be destroying his headset, because Bottas is not going to fight Max and win the championship. I like Bottas. I think he's a very good driver, but he's no JFK and he's no Max Verstappen. So both these two drivers are in a different league, and that's why this championship. But one thing I will say, if Max Verstappen was in a Mercedes, I would put my money on Max. The guy is very good and he should win a championship and more. Whether it will happen this year or not, I don't know. But I have to say, Mr. Rogers, last few races, the body language from the Red Bull entourage, Max included, and Christian Horner, stuff they are saying, and if you see the body language and stuff Toto and his Wolfpack are saying, it's just looks like you put a guy in a corner that, hey, I'm leading the championship, you have to win the last four races, and that's the only way you will win the championship. Be careful what you wish for, just might come true on Sunday. And having said that, shall we take a quick look before we get back on the track on the quali situation?
Absolutely. The quali situation was epic, of course, with the big mishap in a what was supposed to be sublime flying lap. But once you crash, the sublime becomes history.
Yes. And as they say, to finish first, you first have to finish. But sir, the big surprise in Q1 was both Sauber Alfa Romeos moving to Q2, while James Bond did not meet his target, and both Aston Martins out in Q1, which was very, very surprising. Comrade Nikita Mazepin was also out, which was not a surprise, and he's the only driver so far this season who has not yet made it to Q2. Gee, LCH was the fastest. Surprise, surprise. Q2, LCH fastest again, Max third, Antonio Giovinazzi made it to Q3, and three big ticket items did not. Daniel Ricciardo, Kimi Raikkonen, and Machismo. What is this for coming to Mr. Rogers? And we had a little sparkling contact between the two Finns Kimi and Bottas. Have you ever seen Kimi and Bottas chatting to each other?
Never.
Yeah, I don't think that there's much love lost between these two. Carlito spun in what Martin Brundle called, he uses this expression quite a lot and I like it, ambition ahead of adhesion. And by the way, speaking of Martin Brundle, have you seen his son do a commentary on F2 races? He sounds and he's just like second coming of Martin Brundle, which he is. But he does a pretty decent job. I like it. Okay, sir, Q3 was the surprise for me was as dominant and as you say, he has the best car. This was the first back-to-back pole position for Lewis this season. And Max, man, what an outstanding job he was doing, all out or nothing. He went out all or nothing in the final minute of Q3 to retake pole position from his championship challenger, but Kiss with Wall of Voodoo put an end to a thrilling qualifying session. He was like 0.3 ahead of 0.3 second ahead of Lewis at the time he crashed. And the sad part is, he crashed on, the track has 27 corners, and he crashed, I believe, in the final corner. And speaking of 27 corners, Kimi being Kimi, he was asked about, you know, 27 corners on this track, what do you think? And his response was classic. He said, not all of them are corners. Any thoughts on the collie, sir?
No, it was pretty much wrapped up as soon as Lewis Hamilton admitted that he was gifted pole by Max making a big mistake and crashing, and he is the best, no matter what anybody says. So there you go.
Had Max taken that pole position, seriously speaking, given the speed and intensity of Lewis coming after him, do you think Max would have won this race?
No. Max is in a Red Bull.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just the Mercedes mojo, whether it was missing or decreased or case of sandbagging, that mojo is back, at least in one of the cars. How come the second car is not fighting for the championship?
Well, the second car is. I mean, and not only that, but Bottas, I mean, he made no qualms about it. He will help Lewis. He doesn't care. I mean, if you didn't see Bottas slowing down and backing up Verstappen, I mean, I saw it. It was pretty clear. No, Verstappen is, yeah, you know, it's amazing, but Bottas, he's a pretty cool and calm guy right now, and he's playing the team game. He is Lewis Hamilton's key fob.
He has said it. He has said about his teammate what Sergio Perez recently said about his teammate. It's very hard to beat him. It's simple as that. Anyway, sir, the tempo of the race and temper of the drivers were turned upside down when Mick Schumacher hit the barriers on lap 10 of 50, bringing out the safety car. The Benz boys were called in to the pits for tire change. Let the games begin. Max complaining over slow speed of Bottas, which you just alluded to, on his way to the pits. And you know, I don't know if you remember this, many years ago when Kimi was with McLaren, he pulled that stunt. FIA said, okay, you know, we're not going to allow that. And there are rules against this kind of stuff. But there's a lot of people doing their own thing. But even when you know this, you shouldn't be doing this. That was not very cool from Bottas, but we're not going to judge a driver on one action over a period of a season or a career. What was your take on that, Senor?
I think Bottas was in the rules. I mean, Bottas was doing what was in the rules. And as Massey, after the race, gets into his Mercedes-Benz, that's paid for, by the way, yeah, he had nothing much to say about it. But he was very comfortable on his ride home. Wow, you are astute.
Yes, sir. Okay, then the race was red flagged due to damage to Tech Pro barrier, meaning a free stop for Max. The so far luckless Max. His Highness Hamilton was advised by his team, Max can change tires per rules. Racing is like life. What goes around comes around. LCH himself was such a beneficiary at Imola. You know, another thing that was kind of strange about this race, both Lewis and Max, they were so preoccupied with what the other guy was doing. Lewis is saying he cannot change tires, and the team had to tell him, And then later Max was complaining, well, he's 10 cars length behind. He can't do that. And then I find out, and again, I'm no expert like Massey, that the rule about 10 cars behind is only on the original start, not on these restarts and all that kind of stuff. But these people were really, instead of minding their own beeswax, as a friend of mine used to say, they were getting in other people's issues. Now, one thing, you know, the best part of watching a Formula One race is a standing start. And this time we had quite a few. So the second standing start of the race, with Max and LCH on front row, saw LCH get ahead. But Max, as Brundle would say, does not like to yield, not even to a lapped car, which we saw in Brazil some years ago. Both Max and LCH fought for the same turf, and Max was forced off track and grabbed the lead from Esteban Ocon. LCH was third, and not too thrilled about it. But the green turned again to red as Charles Leclerc and Sergio Perez played Let's Get Physical and invited George Russell and Nikita Mazepin to the DNF chapel. Speaking of Nikita Mazepin, he was out, not his fault, and then Mick Schumacher had crashed earlier. Pretty pathetic season for Haas, wouldn't you say so? Especially comparing to their first season.
Yeah, I mean, they've just gone downhill completely. I think one more season of them and Haas is going to sell for sure. I mean, this is... It's tiring. I feel terrible for Gunther Steiner.
You know, when Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen were there, at least we had some fun. They were crashing into each other, fighting with each other. But this is just really, really bad. But then, sir, came my favorite part of the race. Bargaining between Michael Massey, Mercedes and Red Bull. This was like they were in a bazaar on the Silk Road. The Alpine of Ocon was to be on pole for the third standing start of the race. LCH second and Max demoted to third. This allowed Max to make the move that Max made to pass Ocon and Lewis to take the lead. That was the best move of the race. And I have to say that is the best that Max can show and delivers from time to time, which is very, very impressive. I was very surprised. Now, I don't know if Lewis Hamilton does not want to be anywhere near Max on the track, but I was very surprised that LCH was trying to cover Ocon, and I just couldn't figure out why he would. Because, you know, if you give half an inch to Max, he's going to try to put his car there, but if you leave all the room, then of course he's going to dive and take off. Did that surprise you?
It was great. It was classic. And once again, the greatest of your mindset of all drivers in the world to be mind-boggled by Ocon and let the fiercest rival of his career just take the lead right there was just bizarre. But I said, you know what? I'm sure Hamilton was having a moment, you know, a senior moment, and young Max said, I'm on my way to Tipperary. It was great. I enjoyed that.
But did you think at this restart on lap 16 that Max will be able to hold off Hamilton Hustle for another 35 laps?
Not in a million years. The only thing I thought of was how many times will Lewis Hamilton have to try to pass Max? Because, and you know what? Let's get real. Max knew he had no chance.
On lap 23, your favorite one-time favorite, Sebastian Vettel, experienced another torpedo, this time from Yuki Yamamoto. The bizarre race got more bizarre when 5 laps later, Seb and Kimi got into argy-bargy. And that was very, very strange. You normally don't see Kimi getting into argy-bargy with people. Red flags, VSC, and yellow fever gave the race the look of a sophisticated lane-esque car at night. Of all the places in Saudi Arabia. With 15 laps to go, the gap was about a second between championship challengers and about to move from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia to Tombstone, Arizona. Lap 37, Lewis tried to take the lead and ran into the usual Max resistance, LCH calling him crazy. As Max was told to give position back to Lewis, the two collided. Like we said earlier, LCH claiming he brake tested him. Amazingly, both were able to continue. What are the chances of this, Mr. Roger, a car hitting with the front wing to the rear of another car? You normally have at least a cut tire on one of the cars, or at least a pit stop required for a new nose or a front wing. But they were able to continue. Were they both lucky, or what happened here?
Well, certainly Lewis was lucky, but his relationship with Lady Luck has been ongoing for many, many, many years, and he handles it very well. Yes, and certainly a puncture on Max's part. Well, it would have ended a lot of suffering when you think about it. That may have been a good thing, but it didn't happen. So yes, Lady Luck rears her beautiful figure.
So instead of dating Pussycat Doll, he's now dating Lady Luck Doll?
Full time.
That's good. Okay, lap 40, Lewis was told Max advised to give position back. Lap 48, this was beautiful. Max pulls a Lewis on Kimi at Spa. Remember that pass?
One of my favorites.
Yes, allows him to pass and immediately repass him, apparently using the DRS. And I think the team had told him, give him the place back strategically. Same time, Max given 5-second penalty. Lap 44, car number 44 is number 1, sailing to victory number 103. And more importantly, going into the season finale this Sunday, equal on points. Basically, motorsports version of sudden death. Whoever finishes ahead will be world champion. To come from behind and win the final 4 races of the season to win the championship will be quite an achievement. This is definitely the best way to set a new championship record. The Wolfpack seems to be ganging up on Red Bull and howling, we will get you in Yas Marina. Sunday evening, we will find out. And Mr. Rogers, you know, it's 13 times this season LCH and Max have finished first and second. And so they have taken it to the max, no pun intended. And the last thing I want to see is the championship decided by a penalty, Kablamo, or, you know, something that, you know, a tire blowed up. We want these people to fight neat and clean. One thing I know for a fact is in the last 10 laps, if Lewis is leading and Max is gets any time within DRS range, he is going to make. He's going to come down like a Stuka fighter over Poland, dive real fast, real loud, and it will be like, if I make it, I make it. If not, dishes are done. What do you think will happen, sir, there in the closing stages between these two Utes?
I think Lewis Hamilton is going to have a great car. I think Red Bull will have a compromised car. They're going to have issues. It's Lewis Hamilton's championship. They're just the better team. I mean, when you look at engineering, dependability, Lewis Hamilton has got this championship in the bag, and he knows it. You could tell by his body language. He's been around the corner before. I mean, when you're getting your 8th championship, when you're getting your 3rd championship, you're pretty experienced. When you're getting your 8th championship, you're beyond a journeyman. I mean, you've seen it all, and it just rolls off the shoulders. And Red Bull, as you said, you could tell they're all at the end of their sticks. I mean, they're barely able to function normally because they're so stressed out. Horner, Dr. Marco, Max, Jos Verstappen, these people need a vacation really, really, really bad. So it's going to end very simply. Lewis will win, Max will crash, and Toto will be celebrating, and Josh, well, he'll be pounding things for weeks to come.
And sir, behind the first and second, Bottas did to Esteban Ocon what he did to Lance Stroll a few years ago, grabbing final step of the podium in the final seconds of the race in the run-up to the checkered flag. This was Bottas' 100th start for Mercedes. This season, you know, this was pretty interesting. This season, Esteban has led more laps of all drivers except Max and LCH. And this is in an Alpine. And this is, he's the teammate of Machismo. So that's very, very impressive, and I do like it. So Ocon was 4th, Daniel Ricciardo 5th, ahead of Pierre Gasly in 6th, then the Ferraris of Leclerc, and Carlos Sainz Jr. And this is how they've been finishing in quite a few races now. The man they call Italian Jesus, Antonio Giovinazzi, scored points for Alfa Romeo in ninth. And after one more race, he's going to Electric Avenue. And Lando Norris took the final championship point for McLaren. And sir, you know, Martin Brundle said before the race started, and I quote, "The championship is won over a season, not over a corner or one race," end quote. And there was another Martin Hines, who told me when we interviewed him in Belgium many years ago, that a young driver has to learn how to win a race and how to lose a race. And speaking of that, Mr. Rogers, when we come back from our break and with some Arabian rose water, because champagne is not allowed during this podcast, we will talk about this commentary from ItaliaRacing.net. Any final thoughts before we take the break, Senor?
Yes, it's very interesting. He's right. And that is the reason why Mr. E, or we also call him the Big E, Mr. Eccleston, said that his greatest of all time was Alan Prost, because of the period. You know, you didn't have radio communications. You didn't have all this information come into you. You actually had to make decisions like a grown-up. And Le Professeur, as he was called, made those right decisions and knew when to win, when to lose, and when to get the points. Because that's how you win a championship. It was very civilized, and I loved it. And I agree with Bernie. Me and Bernie agree on a lot of things. And there you have it. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Okay, folks, I'm in Las Vegas with the next up-and-coming star from the Netherlands, Mr. Max Verstappen. Max, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good today. We are starting on pole. So we will see in the final what we can do.
Okay. How much are you enjoying Vegas so far?
Yeah, it's just really cool to be here and to have a race here as well. Just nice place.
Have you been to the US before?
Yeah, one or two times. One time a race in New Jersey and one time for holiday.
Okay. Now, Mom and Dad were both karting champions. Did you ever think of becoming anything other than a racing driver?
No, mainly from like when I was 3-4 years old. I grew up with go-karts, so it was just normal. I went to go-karts as well.
Your dad raced in Formula One. What is the best advice you have ever received from him regarding racing?
He just have a lot of experience, so he knows what can happen, and he explains me already like when I started at 4 years old, so it helps me.
Do you listen to him?
Yeah. At the end, now it's getting more difficult, but I still listen to him.
Okay, good. You started the season with Intrepid Cards, and now you are racing Zanardi Cards. What led to change of teams?
Yeah, in the beginning, also last year, Intrepid did a really good job in KF. That's why we made a decision to go there. But when we went there after a few races, we could see they had not, they're not enough money to continue, and he had some problems also with Praga, and I think it was better to go back to where I started.
Okay. Now, apart from Papa, who do you admire among Formula One drivers, past or present?
Alonso. I like Alonso because, you know, he doesn't have the best car, but he can still, like, when he qualified 7 or 8, he can still be on the podium.
Very true. Okay, some years ago in Zuera, Spain, you won the pre-final and the final, and I understand both time you came from the back. So tell us about these two races, please.
Yeah, it was just a bit tricky conditions as well because it rained a little bit in pre-final. It was a hard fight with, like, 4 or 5 drivers in the top. At the end, I could just stay in front, so that was good to win already the pre-finals for the championship back then. And the final, the first few laps, I dropped back a lot. I think we had a little too low pressure in the beginning, but at the end, they start the fight again for the lead, and I could catch up and win.
Okay, you know, we all make mistakes in life. If you make a mistake in racing, or if you don't do well, does Jos, the boss, yell at you?
A little, but I think you need. I think at the end, you come out stronger.
Okay. Your favorite track in karting?
For me, it's La Conca, Sarno, and I think these are the two best tracks.
Among the drivers you have raced against, who do you think are very good competitors or good challengers?
I think my teammate Tiene, Felice Tiene, I think he's a good guy. He also has a lot of experience. And when you race with him, he knows what he does.
Okay. How does school fit in your racing life, and what is your favorite subject?
I don't really have a favorite subject, but I do private school, so when I arrive home I can go to someone and teach me private. So now it's getting better. Before, when I was still on a normal school, it was not possible to do it.
When can we expect you in single-seaters?
For sure next year I do one more year karting, and I think the year after I go to kart.
Is Daddy pretty much managing your career?
A little, but we're also talking with new people, and we will see what comes.
Okay, I'm sure Formula One is your focus and goal. Do you follow American racing scene like IndyCars and NASCAR?
Not as much, because it's also not so much on TV in Holland, but it's just fun to watch, but I concentrate more on Formula One.
Now, tell us about Max Verstappen, the young man, not the race car driver. What kind of food you like? What other sports you enjoy? And, you know, what's your hobby apart from motorsports?
I would like to do, you know, like mini bikes I like, but now it's getting more difficult because, you know, every time I have, I put in go-karts. So, it's more go-karts, and before it was mini bike.
Okay. Our program, we have a podcast which is listened by people all over the world, including your country. How about a message to everybody? Tell them about your website in English and Dutch, please.
Please follow www.verstappen.nl. I think, you know, the people also there, they put a lot of effort in the website to keep it updated for me, so I appreciate that a lot.
How about in your language?
Volg alsjeblieft www.verstappen.nl en volg mijn resultaten.
Okay, thank you very much. Nice meeting you. Okay, all the best.
You too. Thank you.
Max, thanks for another wonderful moment with F1Weekly.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And we are going from Arabia to Italia. And I mentioned this website, ItaliaRacing.net, which is in Italian. And again, thanks to modern technology, click of a button, you get thing translated. And sure, you have to give some tolerance for lost in translation. There is this gentleman, I've been reading his stuff for a long time, Massimo Costa, okay, well-respected and writes a lot of stuff. And he has come down in his column, this, you know, when translated, the heading is The Improprieties of the Bully Verstappen as in Schumi in 1997, the FIA for the fraud committed must exclude him from the championship, okay. Posted on December 16th, if anybody wants to read it in full. So now, this is what this gentleman is saying, and these are his words, not mine, okay? Basically, he's saying, he's calling Max Verstappen a neighborhood bully, okay? That this guy just cannot bear to have somebody else take the lead from him, and if he cannot continue to leave, he will crash into the guy. And this is what he's saying. He did it in karting. He did it in his only year of Formula 3. He continued with Toro Rosso in his entry into F1. He continued on this line with Red Bull. And in bracket it says, you will remember the quarrels with Sebastian Vettel, Kimi Raikkonen, Daniel Ricciardo. And I'm sure you recall, Mr. Rogers, that Kimi had also complaining that the most common complaint when he was with Toro Rosso was he was changing direction under braking. And I think we all remember what happened with Daniel Ricciardo in Baku. Okay. Then the gentleman saying that whatever he has done, he has remained unpunished and probably urged to drive in this way by Helmut Marko, Christian Horner, Father Jos, and manager Raymond Vermeulen. You know, it's pretty heavy stuff that he's writing here. And I'm sure this gentleman has been following motor racing for a long time. Okay, now, then he's talking about, this is, I read before FIA confirmation that he did do a sort of a break on this trade. He writes, Verstappen did even better, braking to be deliberately hitting in the hope that Hamilton would retire, thus becoming world champion. And then he says that the FIA has now confirmed that the car, 33, Max's car, gave a beating or reading on the 69 bar with a deceleration of 2.4G. This compared to a violent braking, you get 150 bar and 4.5G. So they're saying that what's up, his defenders are saying he was slowing down is definitely not the case. So this is not good for the sport, and I still say Max is a great racing talent, and I would love to see him win quite a few world championships because he deserves and his talent deserves. But this is not looking good, what happened there. Okay, now let's see what they say here. Max does not have a plan B. Okay, and then he says, they continue to say that he has been mentally destroyed by Hamilton in recent months. And I don't know if they just have given anything and everything to try to win this championship. I mean, if you look at the race in Brazil, how far Max went. And to me, these are racing incidents. You let them race hard. But, you know, we race in different times. That was pretty much too much under new rules and regulation. And then he says, in Jeddah, he managed to accumulate three penalties, the stuff of a rookie. And basically, they're saying that FIA should have disqualified him from the race, just as they did, you know, Michael Schumacher from the whole 97 championship. But then they go heavy on FIA, saying FIA today is weak with an outgoing president, Jean Todt, and an inadequate race director, Michael Massey, who at every race changes his mind about the attribution of penalties, and who in Sao Paulo did not intervene on Max's maneuver against Hamilton, making other drivers say, okay, now we know how to behave since you are not penalized. And this is true. Quite a few drivers have said that they are not clear what the rules are in these kind of situations. So this is very bad. Okay, finally the guy says, there must be a limit to everything and this must not be exceeded. Otherwise the F1 spectacle turns into a shameful spectacle as happened in Jeddah. And the last line is pretty strong. And if Verstappen at Yas Marina will become world champion, he will not be a good example for anyone. What say you?
I sort of understand that kind of perspective because Verstappen is a little bit more heavy-handed than we're used to. And I almost have to agree with him that he has no plan B. It's all or nothing. And you can't be a racing driver with a kamikaze mentality. And that's his downfall. And I believe that it's a very good chance that Max never becomes world champion.
That will be a shame. That will definitely be a shame. I remember, I mean, this goes back, I don't know, early 80s. You remember Michele Alboreto, right?
Of course.
He got into a little argy-bargy with Keke Rosberg, and I think Keke Rosberg around that time had just won his world championship, but he was one of the top dogs. And they got into this argy-bargy, and Keke Rosberg's comment was, he is so talented, he doesn't need to do these things. And that's the thing with Max, you know. But then again, you know, if you're trying so hard to win a championship against a guy who, I mean, against a team that has been dominating, I mean, you're going to give it all. And so from that, and what he does makes him very exciting, that's Max Verstappen. When I was watching that race in Brazil and these people, both of them went way off course and continued. And I loved it. It was, you know, sort of like Dijon Prenot kind of stuff. But with all these rules, and like I said, there are too many rules now. I just don't want this championship to end where somebody crashes into somebody. Because I think if it's something very blatant where Max thinks that he is going to lose this championship and he makes a, you know, like a pulls out a show-me stunt, then I will not be surprised that if he's disqualified from the whole championship. And let's just hope it does not happen. I think both of them have a very good chance, but the momentum Mercedes has, Lewis has the edge. But also, you know, when you keep winning, the law of averages go against you, that sooner or later you will not win. But like you said, you know, Mercedes has very heavy, deep engineering expertise. They've been winning races for a century. It's a German organization, and I've said it many times. Every time a German racing team comes into racing, they clean everybody's clock. Just look how they have dominated Le Mans. Porsche dominated Formula One with their engine, and BMW was the first turbo-powered world champion. So you know, they got a lot of things going, and then they have a team based in England, which, you know, is the epicenter of anything motor racing. The cars are turning right and left, and a driver who is just, unbelievable. I cannot believe in our lifetime we have seen drivers like Senna, Niki Lauda in his determination, Senna, Prost. And then, you know, I used to say about Michael Schumacher, and I was not even his fan, but based on his success, I used to tell everybody that if Hans Christian Andersen was writing a Formula One fairy tale, his hero would not be as successful as Michael was. And now we have a guy who has 103 wins. And what is really scary, he has signed another two-year extension with Honda pulling out. I don't think the cargo culture is going to challenge them, nor will the spaghetti culture. So this guy could be retiring with 10 Grand Prix championships and 120 plus Grand Prix wins. Will you still call him lucky?
Well, I will call him lucky because he's still with the same team dominated since 2014, having gone there in 2013, leaving McLaren at the most impeccable time the planets could provide him. And certainly a decision like that. And I know that Lewis Hamilton is very wise and smart, but you got to give, I mean, a certain amount of luck is involved in that kind of decision making because we can't all know the future. So yes, he is the luckiest man on the face of this earth. But what I'm afraid of is Max has developed a Verstappen style mentality that I don't think is good for the sport, to be honest with you. I think it's fun to watch. I don't even think Max Verstappen will be in Formula One for very long.
You know, speaking of Lewis being with the same team for many years, let me tell you what happened. I will not take the name of the gentleman. One of the other podcasts or a video blog I was watching, they dug up a article from this journalist and read it. And basically, he's talking about Lewis going to Mercedes from McLaren. And the journalist wrote, "History has shown us you don't leave a winning team for a team that is not winning. And here we are." So there is a little bit more than luck involved here, if you know what I mean, Wern.
Well, I mean, great article, except for one thing. He went to Mercedes, not Bob's Restaurant Motors and Company. I mean, for me, Mercedes is sort of a big name. Hitler liked them. Toto likes them. The guy with the mustache.
Oh, you're talking about Sebastian Vettel now?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's, I am just speechless, man, at what we are seeing. You know, we have a teenager who won a Formula One race on his debut with Red Bull. I mean, that is just super. I mean, you and I both know drivers with 10 years of experience go to a new team and halfway through the season they're looking for the adjustment of the brake pedal or trying to get used. And this is a very common thing. Oh, I've only done 6 races with this team. I need to gel in with the car and my mechanic. And here comes this 18-year-old kid, gets into a Red Bull, and voila. And it was Mercedes. Not one, but 2 drivers who helped him win that race. But he had Kimi Raikkonen barreling behind him in a Ferrari. So, I mean, we have tremendous, tremendous talent at play here to decide the championship. And I just hope, you know, if Lewis wins and Max is second, great. If Max wins the race and Lewis is second, great. That's how we want this thing to end. We do. The last thing I want is arbitration going to Supreme Court, as once Indy 500 was decided. You know, we don't want that. We want the action on the track and result on the track, senor.
Well, I know one thing for sure. Teams win championships, not individuals. So I think the ball is in Mercedes' court. I think that Christian Horner needs to be a little more polite. The way he threw Renault under the bus was wrong after bringing four championships. And look at the bitterness trying to get one championship for Honda when it was so easy for Sebastian Vettel and Red Bull. And Martin Brundle talked about his greatest drivers, not mentioning Sebastian Vettel. You know why? Because Renault was so dominant in the Red Bull that Mr. Brundle thought that Vettel had it, well, that Vettel was a little lucky at Red Bull getting those championships. So yes, indeed, in reflection, it's interesting. But yeah, Brundle not mentioning Vettel in his top guns with Alonso and then Machismo. But it's very interesting. But in retrospect, yes, I mean, it's still Mercedes, folks. They've been dominating. They will win next weekend, which will be good because Verstappen has got some serious mental issues. And I think if he won this championship at this early age and thinking that the way to win is by crashing, burning, it would not be right. Over to you, boss.
Well, you know, an idea was floated, and I saw that reported quite a few places that Mercedes should put George Russell in the final two races. That was an interesting concept. Do you subscribe to that theory, sir?
Well, I think it would have been interesting, but Bottas is such a good driver, such a good player, such a team guy. He's so sweet and loving. I mean, I bet you that Bottas brings muffins to the crew every morning. So, no, they couldn't do that. Bottas has been a good guy. I mean, look at him. He's still, I mean, there's no bitterness in this man. It's almost wrong. That's why Max was such a refreshing, evil, angry-ridden dude, because we needed that. Even though, well, he's sort of a bad dude, a bully, as the Italiano writer says. But, hey, we needed some entertainment this year. And that's the whole thing. See, without Max, it would have been a pretty boring year between Lewis Hamilton and Bottas fighting for the championship. So Max brought us a bit of fresh air, a fresh bowl of guacamole that we could all share. I mean, hey, how much LCH can you take, even though we're going to take some more? But at least Max brought us something that we could grab onto and think that, oh, there is hope. But in the end, Red Bull, I mean, it was just too much for them. I think they just bit off more than they could chew. And the irony, if the rules stayed the same next year, it would be interesting, but they're not. They're flipping, flopping, and floping. And this is it for Max. And I think Max knows that. And that's why he's so desperate, leaning on insanity. So there you go. Keep up the good work, LCH. But Max did provide a little levity this year.
Yes, of course. But, you know, if there was no Lewis or if there was no Max, the championship would have been decided by Monza. So both of these people have done a tremendous good for the sport, especially this season. And hopefully it will continue for many years. But, you know, final analysis, I would say the final race, what we would like to see, or at least I would like to see, is one of them take pole position, dominate the race, and say, thank you very much for a good fight, whether it's Lewis or Max.
Well, it's going to be Lewis, and we know that. But in the end, what we don't want is Mr. Massey getting involved in the final race. So I suggest that Massey just stay home.
You mean he should not be calling Jonathan Wheatley of Red Bull and say, we would like to offer you second place or third place in the championship. Can you get back to me in 1 minute or maybe two?
No, I think that's good. But what I am suggesting is we send Drew Carey through Abu Dhabi, and Massey could substitute at Let's Make a Deal.
There you go.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Listen, folks, I know it's been rough. It's been tough. I know it's crazy. We got one more race to go. Let's go, Fernando. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.